Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And Fred and I were just talking about those unfortunate situations where perhaps you're in charge of a design team, and no matter what you do, you can't get your marketing team, your requirements team, or your boss more generally to give you anything besides a requirement that goes beyond MTBF. They say, don't care, it's an MTBF reliability requirement. You need to meet that. Yeah. What do you do as a designer?
Yeah. Now, I might shock you here, Chris. Now, in defense of that marketing team and your boss and everybody else, is usually those come from one of two sources. One is their customer. The primary mm-hmm. customer says, here's the reliability requirement, XYZ MTBF, blah. That's it. That's all you get from the customer. Now, they may go on and on about warranty costs and duration and fitness of use and conditions and everything else. And that those other elements are not tagged as being reliability. So some in defense of some of the folks is that the customers say that's what you want. And the other place that it comes from is industry norms. Right. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the industry is using MTBF. So, well, I guess I have to use it too. So that's what your requirement is, you know, director of reliability or director of engineering, make it so that it has this MTBF, which is fortunate. I mean, you could do pretty much anything and you can get whatever MTBF number you want. So it's usually, you know, if the person you asked this question, so I suspect that you ran into somebody that knew MTBF wasn't good enough for helping them make a good product. But they only get this requirement. Yeah, now you're stuck, right?
And there's maybe a third reason why it's not the marketing team's fault or what have you, and it may relate to industry norms. But if you got competitors who on their websites or their glossy brochures quote the MTBF, part of their marketing campaign, but it's silly not to have a number there as well. And if for whatever reason customers rightly or wrongly make a decision on that metric, then you are justifiably being told we need to meet or be competitive, at least in terms of the metric that is mean time between failure. So I completely concur. It's not always the luxury at play. It can be a circumstance thrust upon.
Yeah.
An organization.
Now, one of the best responses I ever had to this circumstance, and I was this giddy when I was preparing to go do this it was a short meeting with a couple of the marketing folks for this organization. And they had asked, well, pretty much the way you phrased this topic was, well, if MTBF isn't useful, then what am I supposed to do? And I says, well, and it was a small market and they had long-standing relationships with their key customers. And I said, why don't you just go educate them how silly your competitors' MTBF values really are? Let's educate your customers. Here's the three questions you need to ask that will put anybody that's putting forward MTBF on their heels, especially if they really don't know what they're doing, right? And then simultaneously, you need to inform your customers, here's what we're listening to, what you really want. Here's the complete statement of how mm-hmm. we understand it. And here's the evidence that we have that supports our claims that it's 95% reliable over 4 years and so on. And the marketing guys loved it. The sales guys loved it because they could have a meaningful conversation simultaneously saying, here's how we're getting it right. Here's how we know that we have it right. And here's how you can explore whether our competitors are just giving you fictitious numbers or really know what they're doing. And it was a quick 1 hour discussion with these folks, armed them with five or six different ways to go about doing it. And I'm quite sure that they cleaned it up a little bit and made it more suitable for a client or a customer discussion, but they just loved it because it allowed them to showcase that the reliability program at their organization, which was really, really good, and that they didn't have to convert the really good work into a single number and then hope that it was good enough. And so they were pretty happy with that approach, but that would, I should probably bundle that into a course and sell it.
You should, or at the very least, an interesting podcast.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But sometimes it's ignorance, right? I've got 4,000 things I got to specify and understand and get this product going into the design process. And everybody knows we got to make a reliable product. So who cares what metric we use? I've run into that also. So, I mean, there's so many different circumstances, but when it's internal, when you're getting this from your boss and that's what they want, you still got to deliver that number. The other place I've run into this is it was a condition of sale. If you don't give us a parts count prediction with an MTBF value at the end of it, we're not going to buy your product.
That's right.
You realize that it's worthless. Yes, we realize it's important. It's worthless. It's in the contract. We have to do it. Okay. So what do you do?
I think we both agree that the first thing you should try and do is educate the relevant stakeholder. Say, is this really what you want? Because if it is, this is what it means. And 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, they are horrified when you explain statistically what it means. And then say, well, let's work together on a better metric. And then you start that conversation. But let's just say, for whatever reason, you can't do that, or you've tried that, it's not going to work. Then you are in charge of designing a product which needs to meet an MTBF requirement. And that's it. Even though you might not agree with it as a requirement, how do you then motivate your design team to create things that are good for the customer? And I typically suggest that even if you have an MTBF requirement, you break it down into an availability or reliability, whatever it means, such that if you meet your reliability target after 4 years or 5 years, whatever the operational life of your system is, that implicitly you'll meet the MTBF requirement. Once you start doing that, then you can break it down into analyzing where in failures, where out failures, targeting reliability growth, things like that. You can really start juicing up the design process. What about you, Fred? Have you
had
any success?
Yeah, definitely. It's the wrong thing to do is take that MTBF value and apportion the MTBF out. So your power supply now has this 9 million hour MTBF value, or some other ridiculous number. Is I find that it becomes a translation. So I want X MTBF value, right? Let's convert that over to, what are you saying you want that to be in reliability over the expected duration? And if we know that we've got as an overall system and we're given just this one number, the first part is that education part you mentioned, Chris, is I almost always ask, all right, so what do you really want? What do you want to have happen? And usually it's, well, I want very few failures over this duration, right? And then we do a little math, and you're right. I had one customer group client, when we did just a quick math, they wanted no more than one failure per quarter. And they were, when we interpreted the MTBF, that's what they're meaning, and that's what they really wanted. And he says, well, that means you have a reliability of, 36% over a quarter. Well, that sounds horrible. We can't use that. Well, how about you make a better product? At least be honest about what you're trying to sell here, right? But anyway, that part of it is the education. But I find that even just asking that first question is, all right, well, over what duration are you expecting this to go? And unfortunately, you still run into people that think MTBF. You run into people that think MTBF is a duration. That's the failure-free period, and then that's a whole other discussion. But usually I ask, well, what do you really want? Generally, it's very few failures over some duration. All right, well, we've got two of the four elements now. We're off to the races. And then for the rest of the team is use that to break out the fault tree or the apportionment or the block diagram or set it as a proper reliability or availability targets that can be interpreted and used to select suppliers to make design decisions and so on.
Yeah, and at that stage, if you cannot educate anymore, if you those questions you're asking about what you really want is falling on deaf ears, then all you can do is motivate your designers, your engineers. To do that, you need that framework, which is usually a reliability goal broken down potentially into different stages of the operational life. You need to focus on harnessing the effort of your or unleashing the intelligence of your design team, and that usually means you have to go to use a more correct metric, regardless, and just by meeting that meeting the requirements or the implied metric value, then you will inevitably meet your MTBF. But if you do it in a structured way, you actually harness or focus design effort on the critical bits, not the bits with numbers that don't mean anything. And that's the key. All you want to do is make sure you focus on the vital few and not the trivial thousands when you're designing.
Yep.
And you can't do that with that MTBF apportionment that you were talking about.
No, definitely not. And it, I mean, besides all the various reasons I don't like MTBF, it doesn't serve your team to use it. It doesn't help them to make better decisions and to focus and so on. All of the things we talked about in the last episode also is this building this framework and this model part of it. Now, at the end of the day, if your boss says, well, what's the MTBF? Where are you at? You can translate it back. You can take a Weibull distribution or a Monte Carlo output or the results of a block diagram availability analysis, and you can calculate out an MTBF value and make a comparison. Mm-hmm. The hard part I find teams doing is being consistent about doing that translation and not muddling it up too much and then getting, oh, well, don't do Weibull analysis. We're not paid to do that. We're paid to calculate MTBF. And at some point, it's the same as don't micromanage it, right? If you want a good, reliable product that meets that requirement, we're going to go do it. And we're using these tools to go do it.
And again, the reason you do it is because you need to inform your design effort. And just repeating it, I know you and I furiously agree, but just repeating that the key message here so that we make it clear is that if you do use the MTBF, including apportioned MTBF goals, it doesn't give you your designers the information they need to understand where the critical parts of the system are and how that requires renewed or special focus, which is what we're all about, designing failures out. To do that, we need to know the weak points.
Yeah. There's another aspect of why you want to translate out of using MTBF within your organization is Chris, you're familiar with the chi-squared method for sample size determination,
mm-hmm.
right? Yep. Based on an exponential distribution, and MTBF fits perfectly into this calculation. There mm-hmm. are, and this may be shocking, Chris, this may be, I hope you're sitting down.
Okay.
And now if you're at your usual recording spot, you're in the library, right?
That's correct.
Right. You're surrounded by the world's knowledge, right? And in those sacred tomes of many reliability books, they talk about using test design, and you need to, one of the most common questions is sample size. And they almost always go to, well, you've got an MTBF requirement, and so you use the chi-squared distribution to figure out how many samples you need. And you tally up total time with how many samples you have available, and you can sort it out, right? You get a number. And I just cringe every time I see that. Every time somebody says, well, how do I use the chi-squared with this? And it's like, well, you don't. There's a fundamental flaw that if I'm trying to find out how many bearings I need to run and to determine their time to failure distribution, if I assume that every cycle of the bearing has an equal chance of failing. When I know it's a wear out mechanism, when I know it's the grease breaks down and the metals abrade away and that leads to the failure, I am fooling myself. I could run 1,000 bearings for an hour and show that it's better than it is. But that's the problem I have with the chi-squared. So part of this discussion and translating away from MTBF is the folks that are eventually going to be saying, well, how many samples do I need? You really don't want them to just pull out the old chi-squared and because that's the spec they're given that fits right into that. They don't have to make that assumption. That's already being made for them, that it's a constant failure rate or constant hazard rate. And that can be very damaging, is you get these test results that are convenient but inconsistent with what you really need to know.
And I'll take it one step further, and I'll just, before I say what I'm about to say, Fred, just confirm that you too are sitting down with the shock and horror you're about to hear. But a lot of people reference the Mill Handbook Reliability Demonstration or Fixed Duration Test for proving or demonstrating that you meet a reliability target. And the first thing that you need to assume are the probability that you are wrong. It's the first thing you need to assume. And a lot of managers aren't happy with that.
Right.
So you have to get your test regime sorted out. You need to say, well, I'm willing to accept a 20% chance that even if it does pass my test, it actually doesn't have a reliability which meets our goal.
Well, that was that part of undergraduate stats course that most of our colleagues just guys glazed over and they decided to go do something else.
Exactly. So that's another problem with the chi-squared test. But I suppose the bigger one, and I'll go back to the point you were talking about, is that you know it's wear out. Chi-squared assumes that the thing is being tested. So the chi-squared approach assumes that the thing that is being tested has a constant hazard rate. It actually, through a theorem called the central limit theorem, that is okay if and only if you typically have more than 30 samples. And the reason being is that when you sort of add random variables together, they sort of behave in a very similar way. And as a rule, if you have 30 or more added up, it doesn't matter what the underlying distribution is, the approach for estimating the mean becomes more or less accurate regardless of the underlying nature of failure.
Right. We're not interested in the mean oftentimes, though. We're interested in the tails.
That's true. But before we get to that conversation, the Mill Handbook, which actually quite explicitly says that, you know, when you typically test or have no fewer than 30 samples, if you look at their test plans, they often only have 3, 4, or 5 failures.
Mm-hmm.
So in the often quoted handbook, which says here is how you use a chi-square distribution, in the same book where it says for this to be accurate, you need to have 30 samples. Oh, by the way, here are some sample test plans where you only have 3, 4, 5, or 6. It's entirely inconsistent. And we still are using these approaches as if they demonstrate unequivocally that a reliability goal has been met. But if you just read the handbook thoroughly, you realize it's internally contradictory. And for those wondering why there are test plans with only 3, 4, or 5 failures, the reason being is that it takes a long time to test.
Yep.
So if you have something which has an MTBF of a year, then every additional failure you're required to observe in a test regime might add not just a year, but 5 years to your test plan. And that's just not affordable. It's not realistic. So we pretend that this rule about the underlying statistics doesn't exist just to make sure we don't have too many failures so it doesn't cost too much. Oh, but now that's a laminated approach, which means that in our heart of hearts, if we do this, everything's going to be okay. And it's just a nonsense.
Yeah. 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 There's a few bits of nonsense out there.
That's right.
I'm only working on the no MTBF one. So, you know, and
well,
every now and then I've been accused that the NO MTBF site is too negative, right? I just rant. And that's why I created it, so I could rant. but somebody suggested I should have named it know MTBF, K-N-O-W, MTBF, is to be on the more positive side. You really do need to understand it and where it's useful and where it's not. And I am still looking for useful places other than to start discussions about what reliability in general and then quickly veer off to something more useful. But the idea is, and you mentioned this earlier, Chris, is that it's a thinking game that we need to do. We need to create a reliable product or system and strategy. And the metrics we use matter. And if the education part to whoever is imposing the use of MTBF or MTTF is uneducatable for whatever realm of reasons, right? And there's plenty of forces out there that we're going to be in this situation. We're going to have to use it. Is the only real course of action is translate out of it, do due diligence, do good engineering, do good thought processing, make good decisions, and then at the end of the day, translate it back out. And I would add one more thing to it, Chris, is that I almost always add, well, here's what we really did, and it doesn't use MTBF. Here's how we came up with samples. Here's how we did our design decisions. Here's our reliability models. Here's the evidence that goes to support the different distributions we used. Here's what's most likely to fail and when and how we know that. Because those are all pieces of information that a person trying to make a good decision need to have beyond just 4,000, 1,506.3 MTBF hours. That's just not sufficient in order to make a decision. But that's just me.
Yeah, so I suppose the key message is that if you have the MTBF thrust upon you, don't give up, but you can't use it to inform design efforts. You do need to convert it to the metric that makes sense to you and your team, and then portion goals and do all those sorts of things, because you just need to focus design effort on the weak points of your system all the time, continually understanding, continually review how your system can fail. And those weak points are the things that should dominate your design effort. You can't do that in an informed way if you use the MTBF throughout the entire design process. So you can convert it to a metric that matters and can convert it back to MTBF after that. And the reason you do that is for the reason I just mentioned, to try and focus design effort. Yeah. So don't give up. But you have to let go sometime.
Yeah. I'm nodding. Now, if you're listening to this going, but I want to hear those, right? Let us know, what are the objections? What are the hurdles that you're facing? What are the challenges you're facing? When you get it, you understand that this isn't helping us make a good product or good system. We need to convert it out. So are you having trouble with the educating the folks around you and changing what measures and metrics you have to deal with? Or are you having more trouble on the internal side because everybody sees that top level spec from your boss and they're asking, well, why aren't we using that? It might be an education to your team, or it might be just the processes you're using, and the only one your QA folks, we'll pick on QA folks again, is using the chi-squared. So they're looking for the MTBF value. And so where are you struggling with this? We'd love to hear from you. I'm sure it'll make some more interesting discussions. And if nothing else, we can respond and help you out in your current situation. We'd love to be able to do that. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR and let us know how it's going. And especially if you have a success case, that'd be great. We'd love to share some successes around this thing, but certainly we'd love to hear from you in either way. And we can help if we can. So with that, Chris, are you going to see MTBF later today in your day-to-day work?
With any luck, no. But as a rule, it does crop up every now and then when you're really not interested in seeing it. So never say never.
Never say never. Yeah. Yeah. Good luck with that. I think I'm going to be pretty safe today. Although every now and then I do get a question. It's like, how do I calculate how many spares I need if I have an MTBF value? Well, first off, don't use MTBF. So we'll leave it there. All right. Thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks, Fred. Enjoyable as always.
All right. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.